And it's weird because like artists kind of have what they want and they kind of like to disregard what you bring to the table. So sure. It's like, no, I don't want that. I want Spotify. And it's like, yo, you really don't want Spotify. You see the numbers and stuff, but you really want to build a fan base, an audience. You want to say, hey, who am I? Who do I talk to? Well, I mean, who is my message for? And how do I present that to them in an engaging way that kind of builds over time?
Hey, what's up? This is Gabe from Legion Beats and MIDI Money, which is where we help music producers start, grow, and scale their music production businesses. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to MIDIMoney.com/go.
I'm excited to get into it. It's like, you know, there's like the music people, there's the marketing people, and then there is kind of like where those two overlap, but it's a small overlap. There's only so many of us that are kind of playing around in there, and I've definitely noticed you're one of those people. So I love connecting with people like you and geeking out about this stuff.
Yeah, and it's weird too, because like when I started to kind of kick out the information that I know, I thought it'd hurt my artistry, like my career as an artist. And it's like, hey, I'm not that cool artist no more if I only, you know, if I talk about helping other artists instead of just, you know, fulfilling the image. You know how like artists love to, everyone got to be this way and everything has to be about me. And, you know, so it was a challenge at first, but yeah, I love it now.
Yeah, that's interesting too that you say that, because for me, I'm a producer, it's a little bit different. But as far as like being, you know, Legion Beats and doing that thing, providing beats, music services, that kind of stuff to artists. And then later adding on MIDI Money, where we teach producers about that stuff. There was a little bit of like, you start to hear that feedback of like, oh, you just teach this stuff, you don't do this stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, which and is sucks. Of course, yeah, it sucks. And to me, it's like, like there are certain things that people say about me where I'm like, damn, that kind of hurts my feelings. Like maybe they're halfway right. But like that one is like, man, I'm so much better at selling beats than teaching people how to sell beats. So it's just like annoying. It's more annoying than anything, honestly. Like I don't have to teach this stuff, but I like to.
And people need help, man. That's the thing about it. It's like, how is the help going to get out if it's not from the people who are actually playing it in both, you know? I think anything outside of that is kind of, it's the distorted version of help, because they haven't been where, you know, you're trying to take people yourself.
Yeah, no, for sure. So what was just right before we started here, you were talking about how you had kind of done a little bit more on the industry side, and then was it doing that? Who did you say you'd worked with?
Yeah, so I did work with like DJ Khaled. So I was transitioning, man. I was trying to get out of the streets. I used to do bootleg CDs, right? And so in my city, and this is
where are you from?
I'm from Miami, from Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah, same place Ross is from. And I kind of got famous for doing it, man. At first, people used to pick at us or look at us weird until they realized how much money we was making off of bootlegs. And it got.
Oh, I think it. Oh, go ahead. I think it just.
So, yeah, it got crazy. And so artists like Rick Ross, like I met Jeezy out there. I met BMF. And Khaled would come a lot. He would always frequent it. And he gave us his number, his phone number one time. And so we never really kind of hit it off, but once it got to the point where I was catching felonies behind selling bootlegs, I was like, yo, we got to do something different and kind of transition. And I just knew, like, yo, there's nothing else I could do to kind of make this money, especially not legally making almost $500 a day selling bootlegs. I wanted to transition into the music industry, so I reached out and hit Khaled up, and of course he stuck us on the street team. And it was just kind of like, hey, look, I felt I was worth more than that, but I loved it because I got to learn different sides and moved all the way up. And then once I transitioned from that, I met these dope artists that I really wanted to manage and help push and market, and they felt like I didn't know what I was doing at all. And it was listening to their friends and this. So I said, hey, look, I'll take this other guy. We're going to start doing music. And I just blow it up. I'm not even an artist or nothing. I'm just trying to prove a point to get these guys' attention so they can okay me and say, hey, look, you're good enough to manage us or to market us or whatever, and we trust you. But what happened was we dropped our first song. I got 20,000 streams in the first week, bookings out of town and stuff. And so now I'm a rapper because that's what's happening and people love it. Yeah. And it kind of just ran on. Yeah. So it kind of just ran on and exploded over the next 5 years from that. Yeah.
Nice. And then, but you continue to do the artist side of things, but then also the management, the marketing.
Yeah, because I kind of had to manage and market everything we had going on as artists. We were a duo. And so my boy, he kind of just did music and videos, and I kind of had to do everything else. And so it was a learning experience, applying the knowledge I already had previously and just kind of learning. And then the digital thing kind of happened in the midst of that, because everything was street team. Like, we would take posters and run it up, light poles and everywhere. I mean, you couldn't go to an event without seeing major posters, like life-size cutouts and stuff, because that's just how we promote it. And now in a digital space, it kind of just figuring out how does that transition from the streets into the internet. And yeah, that's what I've been kind of doing and perfecting that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think it can go one or two ways when people have that background. Like, you know, the analogy for me as a producer is like, if you started making beats, you know, on some old hardware or something, then in a lot of ways, either you're going to take those skills and be able to translate them into all the cool new software stuff, and you're going to be even doper and better, or you're going to kind of get left behind because you don't understand it. I think it's the same thing in the marketing world, where all these concepts basically just get recycled, the same ideas, right? Like, whether if that is literally out, you know, in the streets handing out stuff, or whether if that is figuring out how to do, you know, digital, you know, advertising or organic, you know, any of that kind of stuff, it's all the same like concept. It's just, can you figure out how to translate that? And I think in a lot of ways it can be an advantage if you come from the version where you had to actually physically go do it. You know what I mean? Oh, did I lose you? Yeah, working with DJ Khaled, street team. And then, you know, that evolved to you kind of managing, and then you becoming your own case study essentially as an artist, and then that kind of growing into its own thing. And then kind of the evolution from like the analog version, let's say, of like, I don't know, putting up
guerrilla marketing stuff out
to the digital version. Yeah, man. So I don't know, maybe we can take it from there. So what did that transition look like for you?
I mean, from coming from an artist, becoming an artist, it was a different thing, because I had to be in a studio, I had to record, and I had to connect with engineers, and then I had to also route tours and handle bookings and act like my name was Rose and the emails, you know, like I had representation that was, you know, outside just to look professional. Yeah, man, but we got hung on a tour one time, and that's what kind of made me like, yo, I need help. We had 2 weeks in Cali, about seven to nine dates. And bro, we flew in from, one part of Cali, had to drive 9 hours away to the first show, 7 hours back. It was just routed horribly. And I was like, yeah, this can't be life. I didn't want to do that anymore. So, but fast forward, man, we had some cool stuff. Entertainment reached out to kind of do our booking, stuff like that. But the group, we kind of separated on direction. We two artists, we kind of had different plans at that point. You know, we wasn't at the starting point no more. We had some form of success, and I guess our own ideas was kind of conflicting. And so I said, I took a break, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna help artists full time. And that's what started the I Help Rap Artists situation and the Young Exec. And so I've been doing that, and now I'm just getting back into becoming an artist again, a solo artist. So yeah.
Okay. Cool. Dope. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I remember seeing some of the I Help Rap Artists? Is that the handle and stuff like that? Mm-hmm.
The I Help Rap Artists. I still got some of the videos on my the Young Exec page and my IGTV. It's a lot of gems. The most videos that got the best responses and value. And so that's what I just wanted to add value to the space. And I seen a lot of artists were still moving off the old way and not knowing how they can actually get in front of people, target people online that do like them or engage with the content. So I kind of just wanted to put that out there and kind of help.
Yeah, that's dope. And part of why I wanted to, you know, have you on here is one, I just love talking to people who are, you know, interested in the same kinds of things, the marketing and how it relates to music and stuff like that. But also, you know, we have mostly an audience of producers. We definitely have a range. We got artists, we got entrepreneurs, you know, all kinds of people who do listen. But what I thought was specifically interesting for you that'll be interesting to a lot of producers is you do a lot of stuff for an audience of artists, just like a lot of producers do. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's one of the things that a lot of times we're teaching is, okay, cool, sell beats. That's probably what you want to sell if you're a producer. But also, how do you add value in these different ways, whether if that is different services, information, you know, that type of thing. And so you're somebody who I see who's doing really well, offering a lot of value on that side. So I'd love to just, you know, I want to dive in a little bit more as far as your process there and stuff like that. So I know you have, what's the you know, the value ladder? What's the different products that you offer to artists?
So And it's weird because like artists kind of have what they want and they kind of like to disregard what you bring to the table. So sure. It's like, no, I don't want that. I want Spotify. And it's like, yo, you really don't want Spotify. You see the numbers and stuff, but you really want to build a fan base, an audience. You want to say, hey, who am I? Who do I talk to? Well, I mean, who is my message for? And how do I present that to them in an engaging way that kind of builds over time and create a community? And that's what I try to help artists understand. You know, it's like, it's not about the numbers. It's about up on Spotify from having a small base of people who are really dedicated. And when I put out content or music, they resonate with it. And I guess it, caught the algorithms of Spotify and resulted in explosion. But yeah, that's my main thing. It's like, how do we find out who you're speaking to? Because most artists don't know. They, hey, I rap, I'm a rapper. And I sound like this person. And it's like, yo, it's very, you know, it's a lot of different styles of rap, especially now mixing genres and what can you find your audience? So I asked them something simple. It's like, yo, if your audience, what would they shop at? If they drunk coffee, would it be more of a Dunkin' Donuts or a Starbucks? And they're lost, you know? And it's like, yo, you need to find out what do they shop? What do they like? What do they eat? You know, and it kind of makes them think more so like, yo, I don't know anything about my audience and what are you speaking about? And that might help you. So I kind of start from there and just getting that, what does the brand stand for? What's the identity? Who are you speaking to? And then from there, we kind of target the audience. And so, and then that's the biggest thing is targeting them and what to put in front of them. And so I like to use Facebook for that. I like to use Instagram influencers because on Facebook, you got to test the audience. And sometimes that can cost thousands of dollars before you pull in the right data. You can pull influencers for, you know, 100, 150 a piece and you get a lot of traction. Now you have an audience and content that works well and you can retarget that and build up a lookalike audience from there. So it's kind of like a hack to the testing process.
I like that. So as far as the process for finding influencers, finding the right influencers, making sure they post the right content with the right call to action, what does that look like? What's the
process there? So that just looks like it goes on to the message. So if it's more so like I would test out like a Say Cheese or, you know, a smaller form of that type of page. If it's more, I say like commercial, I'll probably go towards more like our generation music or something like that. And so we just figure that out. Sometimes we miss, and that's the thing. It's like, and that's why I let artists know, hey, this is testing. We're trying to figure things out in the beginning. So we will go across all these things based on the research. I just kind of do check on similar artists like them and see what they're doing. And a lot of things I like to do is if I could find a smaller artist that hasn't really hit like a peak or a crazy amount of buzz, you can kind of search them up and you can see the exact platforms they're doing interviews on. You can see exactly, you know, what kind of blogs are getting posted on. And most of the time, these are blogs, smaller interviews, smaller YouTube channels. Like, for example, it's an artist named Rakin. He's just coming up and I'm searching him and I see, yo, he's Twitch live streams is what they're kind of using to kind of get him out there. Because of the guy who's doing a reaction video is like, yo, it's only 4,000 views on this video. Why do they keep using him? And then I realized, oh, he's live streaming from Twitch where he has 500,000, you know, subscribers on there. So, but they're using stuff like that. So I would kind of mirror stuff like that and just kind of see where the artist falls at and how could that help? And if we get traction from it, let's keep doing it. If not, you know, let's figure something else out and just understand that we're testing right now. So after we test and we kind of have a solid amount of information, and it's all on goals. So some artists get famous. I don't want to have to spend all of this. I just want to make money. So let's set up a ClickFunnels and see how we can add value to people and get them into your world, you know, meeting you from the first day to becoming a customer that's, you know, spending $20.
What kind of funnels are you setting up for artists? What's the, is it like a free plus shipping?
One of them is a free plus shipping. Another one is, hey, get this free t-shirt. We'll get access to exclusive videos and if you get the email, then video, of course, and just kind of lead them into like a value proposition, maybe like an emotional piece of content that kind of connects with the art in some kind of way. It's just the one I got now.
And what's the thing as you pull it up, what are the things that you've seen that have worked that have sold? Because like as a producer, I feel like there's a little or maybe a big advantage compared to an artist, because we still, as of right now, at least have a product that people will spend money, like beats, like people will spend money. Like
maybe I see your funnel and that was like, yo, that's the epitome of like a producer funnel. It's like, yo, that's amazing. It's like, how did I, you know, but an artist you can't really do that with unless they
it's a little trickier, right? Audience. It's more about, and you know, when people ask me, it's I say, okay, well, it's basically what you're saying. It's about growing that list, it's nurturing that relationship, mm-hmm. and then okay, how do we leverage that into products and experiences now that you have that relationship? Because the music itself, it's almost an inconvenience. If you say, oh, here's mm-hmm. an MP3 download, it's like, well, can I just go on Spotify and listen, or no? Like this is annoying.
So one of the ones I've seen kind of working well, was giving away a free mask that was branded with the artist's or a message on that mask that kind of resonates with the audience they're going after. So not so much music leading. It's like, hey, get this free mask. And when you come in, it's like, yo, the mask, it's free. Get it, you know, just pay shipping on the mask. And then, hey, it's an order bump. You'll get two more of these for $12. And after they do that, then they can get the shirt that matches the mask. And then, you know, it's a bundle from there. And then that's what the bundle you're introducing to the music. So by the time you get introduced to the music, you already spent about $22, you know, on masks that you need to wear now because of CDC recommendations and stuff like that. So I kind of, that was one that kind of worked well right out the gate.
That's dope. So for something like that, as far as getting the traffic there in the first place, is it an ad? Like, what is it about that? Like, why does anybody want that mask to even pay the shipping for? Is it just got a cool design? Or
so at that point, yeah, it's just based on the cool design or something on it that says, hey, look, that's dope. You know,
got it. So at that point, you're almost treating it more as like, I don't know, an e-com thing or something where you're exactly. selling masks. And then it's like, okay, how can I create an ad or in a content or an influencer or whatever it is that's like, hey, check it out. These masks are dope. Go here. They're free. You just got to pay the shipping. Bam. Now they see that. Okay, cool. Maybe I'll buy a couple more from the order form bump. Maybe I'll buy this t-shirt or whatever that's got the same thing. And now is the next page where it's like, hey, what's up? My name's Gabe. I'm actually an artist. This is my stuff, blah, blah, blah. I'd love to, mm-hmm. is that kind of right?
Yeah, kind of just like that, yeah.
Okay, dope.
Just like that. So, and it helps, does have any previous fans because then you can kind of, you know, they already know what you got going on. But if not, if it's brand new and you have nothing going on, if an artist want to take that route, but my problem is most artists don't want to take that route. They want to go towards, you know, hey, I need to be seen on the biggest websites. I need an interview here. I need to spend $8,000 on WorldStar. That's not going to get me any views or a return on my investment. I just want to look cool and have some people call me and say, hey, you was on WorldStar. So, you know, that's the problem. And a part of that is like mindset, and you have to kind of reframe or reteach them and make them all these false concepts. And it's like, yo, the music industry has changed dramatically over the past few years. And if you want to, you know, succeed that way, you're going to need an income and you need money. So why not set up a funnel to kind of generate income? Why not, you know, set up a website, at least at minimum, set up a Shopify store and let's get some traffic going there. Because for you to get monetized on YouTube, you're going to need a website and become a Google partner anyway. So,
right. Yeah. And yeah, it's the same. It's, you know, the producer version is, well, I just want to get placements and I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I don't want to build funnels and write emails and, you know, so I see it also. But of course,
I know the guys with placements who still come back around 5-10 years later and, you know, you still got to do this.
You know them. They literally hit me up specifically. Like, I'm like, damn, bro, you won Grammys and you made my favorite song. And like, you know, it's not a big secret. Some of these guys I've worked with, but they're looking at me like, damn, how did you're making, you know, consistent, better money. Like, income, can you show me how to do that? You know, and then that's fun for me. I get to work with some of these guys who are way more successful on the industry side than I ever was back when I was trying to be. But now they're asking me like, hey, can you help me, you know, set this thing up? Can you help me set up my ads? Can we get a funnel going? You know what I mean?
But it's trying to tell artists that from the beginning, yo, get this. So as you, I like to, if you can mirror that and do it on both, if you can play the industry side while you're building this up, then you're good because you got a customer base. You can do some of the things that the industry guys just can't do. Like I said, like the thing with Tory Lanez, what he did with this NFT project, bro, there's nobody out. The hottest, who's hot? Nobody can do that right now. And, you know, Kendrick can't sell it. I'm not saying he can't, but he hasn't sold $50,000 albums, you know.
$1 million
off sales and his pocket.
You just got to give him credit for doing it, you know, whether if anybody else could have done it, you know, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not, but he did it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what I'm looking at. It's like finding ways like that. And if we're stuck following the trends, then we'll never get, you know, to that. And I thought Tory was just smart. His story, he was going through some things and had a lot of pushback, and he was in a hard place, which kind of birthed the idea to even look into something different, you know?
Right. So, and by the way, for anybody who's listening, and I'm a kind of a beginner on this, maybe you can fill in more details, but basically he dropped his album as an NFT. So there's a specific amount. There's 1 million copies, I believe, exactly. Mm-hmm, yeah, it cost $1 each. It had 7 songs on there. And so essentially he sold out, I think, in like 60 seconds. So 57 seconds. Okay. so there's $1 million in a minute, essentially. But then with the NFTs, what's dope is you have this kind of royalty, where basically now they're essentially like collector's items, you know, cause there's exactly 1 million. So then if somebody resells that, as a fan, that's dope because they can
make money,
potentially sell it for more. And also the original, you know, Tory Lanez and, I assume, hopefully, the producers and other people involved are also getting a percentage because of the way it's kind of built into the smart contracts and the technology. A lot of it's over my head, but I understand that that's more or less
the same for me. Same for me. It's a little confusing, but I just see the potential in it. It's like even with the smart contracts or with the royalties, as an independent artist, we have to, if you don't have a pub deal or admin deal, you have to pay out your own royalties every month, essentially. Right. Just a few apps or programs that came out recently that kind of helps assist with that. But with the smart contracts, you can just plug that in one time and everybody gets paid, you know, as the sale happens. And you don't have to worry about calling anybody, hey, with my royalty check, I didn't get anything sent out, you know? And so that used to be a real hassle, man. Like,
Right. Yeah. No, that's there's some exciting stuff there. So I'm wondering more about like, okay, so we talked a little bit about what you're teaching artists, which I think is super dope because that's, you know, similar message to what I'm teaching as well. I'm wondering about your sales process. How are you selling to artists? How are you generating the traffic? What's that funnel look like? What's the, you know what I mean? How are you doing it?
Basically what I'm doing is like, I'm dropping little small videos, adding value. And then I take those same videos and run ads to them and they go to a funnel basically saying, and I changed it a few different ways. My first funnel was a ebook. It was a free ebook on Instagram. That's kind of how I built majority of the list. And I was running ads to that. Hey, how get better results on Instagram as an artist. And it was simple. It was like 5 pages. It was just showing them how they can, you know, create an aesthetic, position themselves, small little easy tips. And people got a lot of value from it. And I put that out while I was working on a bigger one. But that was the Spotify Growth Hacks. And so I took tips that I learned and things that I noticed. And in 2016, South by Southwest, we got booked to do a show in South by Southwest. And I met one of the guys at Spotify, Global Head Programmer. And we spoke for like an hour. He was just giving me gem after gem after gem. And I was like, oh, wow, you know? And I sat on that information until I started the Spotify Growth Hacks, and I put a lot of that in there. And I sold that for, I think, $27. And that was like the best performing product. But what happened after that, the next upsell, people didn't want the consultation. I was trying to sell a consultation and the course, and they was just saying, playlist. I need to get on the playlist. I need to. And so it kind of forced me to say, how can I serve these people in this area, which I didn't like. But I found a few curators and stuff that I could kind of get with. And then the game just kind of changed rapidly, man. After like a year, it was like every playlist was like botted out every, you know. So I said, I got to pull back from this. I got to figure something else out. I don't want to be recommending, you know, people to these guys and just selling them, messing up the algorithm. That goes against everything I kind of stand for. You know, and it's just not going to help. How can you retarget bot traffic? So, so I came up with a full course, man, and just a mastermind. I just kind of gave them everything. And that's what I messed up at. Yeah, I've realized that. I put all my knowledge into one product as a businessman. That was a bad move, but I felt like as value, it provided a lot of value to artists. Yeah.
I mean, man, there's a lot there. I mean, I don't think that's a bad move. I don't necessarily think that's, you know, that's basically what we did with MIDI Money. We've got multiple products now for producers, but our flagship course and program is Producer Funnel Secrets. And that includes a full, you know, training that shows every single thing basically that we've done, as far as how we built our funnel, all that kind of stuff, the template for the funnel, the template for the emails, for the text messages, you get coaching, you get like, it's insane. Mm-hmm. There's an offer library. So like, you know, you want to try to put together your offer. Yeah. The offer library.
Offer library.
Basically, bro. So it's just like, okay, like let's say you're a producer or it's you, right? And you've got your Spotify Growth Hacks and you're like, okay, cool. I want this, but you know, this is great. But now I need some bonuses. I need some other products to help build the value. Oh, well, check it out. Here's 100 things that other people in our community have contributed. It's a chance for them to get their stuff in front of other people. It's a chance for you to add more value to your, you know, audience, particular product or offer or whatever. So that's been super dope. But yeah, we've kind of put everything in there, and it's like, part of me was like, yeah, man, I can't believe we're giving everything away. But ultimately, it's like, I just think that that's honestly the way to do it. You just give them everything, and then they'll, you know, even in my free content, it's not like there's any secrets, you know, like you should join the course because it's structured, it's organized, it's tell you step by step. You get that, you know, that group coaching, you're in that community. So there's reasons to buy the course, but there's really not like, oh, I waited to tell you this one magic thing till you're behind this paywall or you paid for this thing. Sorry, like maybe it's bad for me to say as somebody who teaches, sells courses and stuff, but it's the reality. And I've seen it too from my mentors, you know, people like Russell Brunson were like, bro, you can read his books. They're free plus shipping. It's like 10 bucks.
And then
you
can be in his everything in there,
bro. If you're in his $25,000 mastermind, which I've been, it's the same information, you know, it's delivered in a different way and you get more access and there's community and there's reasons to do it. But there's really not like, oh, here's the real secret. It's actually not. It's like the shit's right there. So like, to me, it's like, give the best stuff away, put it in your content, put it in your courses, of course, and even in your free stuff, because people will learn from that and they'll want more access. They'll want to, you know, keep ascending up as you keep ascending up. And even if you put everything you know, quote unquote, know now, that knowledge base is growing. And every time, you know, this is something I've learned too. I learned this actually from Stephen Larson, who's, you know, great marketer, which is this concept that every time you solve one problem for your customer, you create more. And this is a good thing, right? Like maybe you like perfect for you, right? You had your Spotify growth hacks. Great. Maybe you solved the problem of, you know, understanding the algorithm and understanding certain things, but then now they have this problem of, you know, well, I don't want to do the work, you know, so that's why they wanted the placements, right? So then it's like, okay, cool. So I created a new problem. Can I solve that problem, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe it's, I help my customer make a whole bunch of money. Now they need to figure out where to invest it. You know, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Yeah. It's just that there's always going to be that next
that
level,
next
that
step.
Next step, you know? Yeah. So, and how is that one selling, by the way? I know it's tough, you know, especially in our industry when you've got a mid to high ticket course like that. Mm-hmm. it can be a real challenge because
I'll answer the second part first because it's a little easier. I realized is that nobody really wanted to come out and pay $400 or $500 for a course right off the rip, right? But if I structured it as like what I would do is I noticed, hey, if I sell people on a $97 product after they purchase the ebook, that I can get them on a consultation call for $150. And on that consultation call, I can give them a game plan, let them know, you know, kind of they have going on, and say, hey, what, you know what, you just paid $150 for this phone call, match another $100, and that'll get you into the course. You know what I'm saying? And I noticed that kind of helped sell a $300 course rather than just saying, hey, this is $300. And so the people who paid the $150 to get on the consultation call, I noticed they were more serious. They want to take more action towards their career and not just, you know, jump in. And but I also tried lowering the course, and I found that lowering the course didn't work because now you got a lot of people buying it, but they're not even opening the course. You know, it's like, yo, I got the money, but I can't provide the value if you won't even open it and get past the second video. You know, so
100%. No, I know we can make our course free tomorrow, and like it would. People would not take action. There's something about it. I've seen it in myself too. When I pay, you know, it's the old saying, right? When you pay attention. It's true. Yeah. When you have some skin in the game, when you're like, damn, I better make this work because I just spent my last $500 or $10,000 or $25,000 or $20, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's different for everybody, but whatever that number is to get you up against your back up against the wall a little bit, that's the thing that's gonna make you actually take action, as opposed to like, oh yeah, I got this for free. Oh yeah, it wasn't a big deal. Maybe I'll check it out. It definitely makes a difference. But yeah, the thing that's worked for us to sell, you know, sort of a mid high ticket course has been a webinar. It's worked pretty well.
I was always scared to do the webinars, man, because it looked like people were running ads up to $6,000-$7,000 ads and getting 100 people in a webinar. And it's like, yo, if I didn't present this right enough, and I know, like, you know, I got the layout, but I didn't feel confident enough. I guess I don't know. I need to try.
Yeah, it's worth, you know, like if you haven't yet read Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson, because that basically that whole book is sort of gives that whole outline for how you would do that kind of presentation. And it's worth just reading anyways, just for how to structure.
Yeah, no, I got it. I read it. I got the whole layout.
Okay, like, you already know.
I started mapping it out. I just never hit the go button on it because I guess fear. And that's,
I get it. Yeah. I get it. No, but it is tough. And we built it up over time. And long story, I have mentioned it before, but we ended up scaling up kind of too fast, too quickly. There was times when we were spending, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in ad spend in a week doing a live webinar. And then Thursday comes, I'm like, oh shit. Like if Zoom doesn't work, like I'm fucked. Like if I fuck up this presentation, like I spent $40,000. Like, and then you know what else is a crazy feeling is you start seeing sales come in and you're like, okay, $35,000 today. Like, fuck, we need another $5,000 just to break even. Like that's a weird, from my background, to be like, damn, we only made $30,000 today. Fuck, that means we're still wild. Yeah. So it can be a crazy game. We've now scaled much back on that, and we're approaching some of those things a little bit differently. But yeah, that whole webinar game of like, okay, like you said, you spend a lot of money to get people in there. You hope that it converts. It's a wild ride. It's stressful. It's tiring.
Yeah, man. I can imagine because I attempted a few times, and I just was seeing some of those stories. Like yours is better though because you guys actually made it through. But I seen it tank a lot of people, and it's like, what I'm doing is working, So I can stay around this range and just, I'm making something, and I don't got to go to nobody's job. So I kind of just felt like staying there. But now I have to figure something out because I want to move forward.
And you can do it doesn't have to be that. Like the version that we're mostly running right now is not a live webinar. It's an auto webinar. It's not one of those corny ones where it pretends to be live. It's very clear you opt in. It says, here's your training and I'm just talking to you. There's no fake, chat or whatever, but it's the same, presentation style. And it doesn't work quite as well because there's just something about the energy of being live, but that also works. So it's something that you could do with very low risk other than the time it takes to put in to kind of write it out and record it. I would recommend doing it, but hey, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, just setting it up and ClickFunnels is like,
you can do it if it's... If it's the auto webinar, you can actually do pretty simple. It's basically opt-in page. The next page just has the video there. It just says your training starts now.
So it's no webinar jam and none of that.
The way that I'm doing it, no, it's super simple. Okay. It's really not a lot of crazy automation other than, we do have text messages and emails and stuff that go out. But as far as the actual funnel pages, it's literally like opt-in, next page, here's the video. Order form button pops up after a few minutes or whatever. That takes them to a separate page for the order form, and that's... As far as the pages,
okay, itself, so that reminds me of what's his name? Funnel. What's his name? I can't think of his name, but he looks super young. He looks like he's about 16.
Are you talking about Dan Henry?
Yeah, Dan Henry. Sure. I think he was the first one I seen with like a simple webinar funnel like that. Yeah,
he's amazing for sure. We've definitely gotten some ideas from him for sure. He's a smart dude. And one of the things that he does really well that I am horrible at is focus. Like this, he will really like do one thing, which is tough for me. It's tough. I think it's tough for any entrepreneur. I'm not saying it's easy for him. It takes a ton of discipline where it's like, okay, I've got Legion Beats and we've got these three different things. And then I got Mini Money and that's got three or four different things. And we've got software and we've got, and it's fun and I like to do it, but it's also like, man, probably if I like really honed in on one or two specific funnels and products, like it would probably blow up way more. It's just hard to have that.
I think it's kind of hard to do that, man, because things could change so fast. I'd like to have funnels that go and then a month, 2 months later down the line, it's like, it's nothing happening. So
that's true too. And it's a balance. Like all the smartest people I've talked to that have had the most success, they all basically say the same thing as far as focus, work on that one thing. But at the same time, it's like I have had situations where I was working on something and then I was like, I shouldn't try this other thing because I should focus. But then I do try that other thing and it goes crazy. And that ends up being the thing so it's like hard to know. There's like a balance. You just have to figure out where that balance is and you don't always know in advance. I think the biggest thing, and maybe for somebody who's listening or watching that is still trying to figure it out, like when you're in those early stages, like you do have to stick with it long enough to give it a chance. Because sometimes I think people don't know. Like I think for maybe for you and I, we've done enough things that we have an idea of like, okay, we've had things that have taken off. So we have some idea. Whereas if you don't, you might be like, okay, well, I don't know. I put 2 weeks into this. I built it. And 3 days later, and I'm not rich yet. Like, you know,
that's not, man, it took a while to see those type of results that you want to see, you know, like, but my first funnel to go, to do well, even my first funnel, that was years of affiliate marketing. That was years of marketing. That was paying for, you know, different courses and stuff like that. And that was years of in the real world, guerrilla marketing. I applied all of my strategies and everything I learned in my life up to that point to be able to do that. And some people are just coming from nothing and thinking, hey, I can just sit and snap in. And I'm not saying it's not possible, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like the first thing I did to actually take off. You know?
It takes time. So yeah, so I think it's okay to try different things, but you have to give things enough time to actually know if they're working before you give up on them. You mentioned affiliate marketing. That's something that's been, you know, huge for me in both Legion Beats and Midi Money. And I know that, thank you. I know you're an affiliate for Legion Beats and I appreciate that. And you've brought us some traffic and hopefully you've made some money doing that as well.
Yeah.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. What's your experience been with affiliate marketing?
Oh man. Well, my first experience with it was, like I used to do websites. So I did web design and then, I hosted with iPage and iPage had an affiliate where they would pay you $100 to basically bring someone to host on there. And so by me doing websites, I had to host all of my clients somewhere. And so I would just stick them all on iPage and I was getting these $1,000 checks in the mail every month from iPage. You know, I was like, yo, this is something, you know, to look at. And I kind of stopped from there. But when ClickFunnels came around, that's what kind of really brought me back into it and said like, yo, this is a cool product. I believe in, you know, Russell, I believe in, you know, this funnel system. And I kind of went in on it, you know, from there. Yeah, but that's a tough way to kind of navigate too. Because you have to build the audience, you have to keep them engaged, and you have to add value, you know?
Yeah, no, for me, it's been huge. Like, and it's all about finding the right offers that are perfect for the audience, you know? So I'm not an affiliate for like every random thing that comes across. It's like, no, if, you know, if my buddy Anno Domini is doing a beat pack launch, like I know my audience is going to be interested in that, perfect, I send them that way. If another producer of MIDI Money is doing that, if somebody on the producer side is maybe has like a kit or pack launch or something like that. You know, so I always try to make sure that it's something relevant, and I do software and stuff like that too. In fact, one cool little affiliate marketing hack that's been working well is I have a resources page. So like if you go to midimoney.com/resources, I've got one for producers. You go to legionbeats.com/resources, I've got one for artists. And so basically what that is it's got a bunch of stuff. It's stuff that I use. Some of it is my own stuff. Some of it is links to like software. But most of it, not all of it, is affiliate offers. So it's things that happen, you know, things that I would absolutely genuinely recommend, but they happen to have affiliate links as well. So it does a couple things. One is it's somewhere that I can, you know, just send people like, here's some resources and they'll have a bunch of affiliate links. And then I'll, you know, connect with other producers and artists and whoever else has like offers that make sense on there. But it also becomes a great way to create content. And so we've been doing emails, about once a week. We've kind of gotten on and off of it, but where we're like, go in, we'll pick one of the things, you know, let's say one of them is TubeBuddy, right? Something that's dope for YouTube that you can use. Definitely. We'll write an email that says like, hey, here's a couple little things to keep in mind for YouTube and how to maybe get some more views and whatever and use it. By the way, I happen to use the thing called TubeBuddy. It's pretty dope. You can check it out along with a bunch of other resources at, you know, whatever, midimoney.com/resources. Wow. And now that becomes content that we can send out to our list. It gives value. It sends them to this resources page where they also see all these other offers. So that's been
a cool little
affiliate hack. Thanks, bro. No, and it's been good. And there's also, by the way, if you go there, midimoney.com/resources or legionbeats.com/resources, I've got the share funnel for that. So if you just click one button, you can have that literal exact same funnel yourself and then just swap out your own affiliate link and you know, all that kind of stuff. So
Yeah, so I need to definitely do that because I haven't done that for my audience really, because I felt like I didn't know what to bring to the artist. That's why like you're the only kind of affiliate that I do for them, because I know, hey, you guys need beats, and artists right now, they have a problem with, you know,
yeah,
finding beats, or even, you know, they just go to YouTube and rip them. So it's like, yo, let me give you guys amazing beats from an amazing producer that you guys can actually use and, you know, and get a good sound with. So that's what I run that. And but your idea just gave me some more content, you know, or idea to kind of put some more stuff out. And content is the hardest thing, bro. I sit around and I just like, what am I going to do? How do I post? But what I've been doing is I post on Facebook and I see whatever does well on Facebook. I'll take that and implement it into my newsletter and try to, you know, add value from there. Yeah.
Nice. That's what's up, man. Well, I could geek out on this stuff all day. I'm a little bit short on time today. But man, it was great chatting with you. I guess before we wrap up here, curious what you got coming up that you're excited about, where people can find you, anything else, you know, that we should talk about before we hop off.
Yeah, man. My Instagram at the Young Exec, that's kind of where I'm targeting everything. I got my links in the bio there for the course. I'm updating that on some stuff, even the NFTs, on how artists can mint their own NFT album. I think that's going to be huge, and I love to kind of tackle stuff before it blows. And kind of, you know, so I'm trying to direct artists with that and just give them different ways of how they can approach the music business. So that's kind of just the focus right now.
Dope. That's awesome. Where's the best place for them to find you, for people to find you?
At the Young Exec on Instagram.
Okay.
And then Twitter as well, but it's the Young Exec on Twitter. It's two E's, so I don't like to promote it.
Okay. For sure. The young exec on Instagram. We'll stick with that one.
Yeah.
All right, bro. Appreciate you taking the time. Definitely want to chat with you more, and I'm sure there's some other cool affiliate stuff and different things that we can work on in the future.
Yeah, let's jump on the call and link up sometime in the future, bro.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to the MIDI Money Podcast. If you're not subscribed already, please be sure to do that right now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or comment and like the videos on YouTube. You know, those ratings, reviews, those comments, they all show that people are getting value, helps the algorithm, and helps get this podcast out to more producers. So it means so much to me if you'd be willing to take a couple minutes to do that. Oh, and if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business, and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to midimoney.com/go.